Chapter 17. "You," I snarled, gesturing at Bach with the end of my staff. "You little weasel! You were going to sell me out. I ought to kill you right here." From his vantage point above Elisha's curly-haired head, Bach blinked at me in confusion. I stared at him hard, not daring to leave anything in my expression that the girl would see. If I'd tried to protect Bach, it would only have made it more likely that she would do something to him. By appearing to threaten him, it would make him seem more unimportant to the necromancer and her henchmen. It was the best thing I could do to protect him. Bach got it. His expression flickered through several subtle shades of comprehension, fear, and guilt. He twitched his head at me in a nod of thanks.
"Well, well," Elisha said.
She hadn't moved other than to turn toward me.
"I've never heard of you, but I must admit that you know how to make an entrance, Harry Dresden."
"I took lessons," I said.
"Give me the book," she said.
"Ha," I said. "Why?"
"Because I want it," she said.
"Sorry, it's the hot Christmas present this year," I said. "Maybe you can find a scalper in a parking lot or something." She tilted her head, the fingers of her hand still flickering with little shimmers like heat rising from asphalt.
"You refuse?"
"Yes, Moppet," I told her. "I refuse. I deny thee. No, already." Her eyes narrowed in anger and, well, something happened that I hadn't ever seen before. The store got darker. I don't mean that the lights went out. I mean everything got darker. There was a low, trembling sensation that seemed to make my eyeballs jiggle a little, and the shadows simply expanded up out of the corners and dim areas of the store like time-lapse photography of growing molds. As they slid over portions of the store, that nasty, greasy sensation of cold came with them. When the shadows washed over an outlet that housed the power cords to a pair of table lamps, the lamps themselves went dim and then died out. They covered the old radio, and Aretha Franklin's voice faded away to a whisper and vanished. The shadows got to the register, and its lights went out. And when they brushed the old ceiling fan, it began to whirl down to a stop. The shadows crept over Bach, and he went pale and started shaking. He thrust one hand down onto the counter, as if he had to do it to keep himself upright. The only place the darkness didn't spread was over me. The shadows stopped in a circle all around me, maybe 6 inches away from me and the things I was carrying. The hellfire smoldering in the ruins of my staff glowed more brightly in the darkness, and the tiny sparks falling in a steady rain from my damaged shield bracelet seemed to burn away tiny pockets of the darkness where they fell, only to have it slide back in once they had burned away. This was a kind of power I hadn't felt before. Normally, when someone who can sling major mojo around draws their stuff up around them, it's something violent and active. I'd seen wizards who charged the air around them with so much electricity it made their hair stand on end. Wizards whose power would gather light into nearly solid gem-shaped clouds that orbited around them. Wizards whose mastery of earth magic literally made the ground shake. Wizards who could shroud themselves in dark fire that burned anyone near them with the raw, emotional rage of their magic. This was different. Elisha's power, whatever it was, didn't fill the store. It emptied it in a way that I didn't think I fully understood. Utter stillness spread out from her. Not peace, for that would have been something tranquil, accepting. This stillness was a horrible, hungry emptiness, something that took its power from being not. It was made of the emptiness at the loss of a loved one, of the silence between the beats of a heart, and of the inevitability of the empty void that waited patiently for the stars to grow cold and burn out. It was power wholly different from the burning fires of life that formed the magic I knew. And it was strong. God, it was so strong. I began to tremble as I realized that everything I had wasn't enough to go up against this.
"I don't like your answer," Elisha said. She smiled at me, a slow and evil expression. She had a dimple on one cheek. Hell's bells, an evil dimple. My mouth felt dry, but my voice sounded steady when I spoke.
That's too bad. If you're so upset about not getting a copy, I suggest you take it up with Cowell.
She stared at me with no expression for a moment, and then said,
You are with Cowell?
No, I told her. I was, in fact, forced to drop a car on him last night when he tried to take the book from me.
Liar, she said. Had you truly fought Cowell, you'd be dead.
Whatever, I replied, my tone bored. I'll tell you what I told him. My book. You can't have it. She pursed her lips thoughtfully.
Wait a moment. You were at the mortuary, in the entryway.
We call it the Forensic Institute now.
Her eyes glittered. You found it. You succeeded where Gravain failed, didn't you?
I turned up one corner of my mouth and said nothing. Alicia took in a deep breath.
Perhaps we can reach an understanding.
Funny, I said. Gravain said the very same thing.
Alicia took an eager step toward me. You denied him?
I didn't like his hat.
You have wisdom for one so young, she said. In the end, he is nothing but a dog mourning his fallen master. He would turn on you in a moment. The gratitude of the Capio Corpus, by contrast, is an eternal asset.
Capio Corpus. Roughly translated, the taker of corpses, or bodies. I suddenly had a better idea of why Li Xian had referred to Alicia as my lord.